Dukes here on The Fan. He's checking us out. Go to Mark Zuckerman, who used to cover baseball for the Washington Times. Mark, how you doing, man?
Doing good. How are you guys today?
What's up, Mark?
First and foremost, we said this to Halloran and everybody else we have on the show from your former periodical. Your sports department was tremendous. Tremendous journalism and insight. It was a pleasure always to read you guys, and it was an absolute crime the Times chose to do what they did. So our best luck to you and all those guys, because we really enjoyed your work.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's nice to know at least that last week there hasn't really been much news out there.
Oh, my God.
Worth covering that, you know, there wasn't really need for a sports section the last week. What,
right. Go figure.
How frustrating is that the arena stuff breaks, Shanahan's the coach, Mark McGwire admits steroids, and it's the same time that your former paper decided that sports weren't that interesting. That has to be tremendously frustrating.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for all of us that we've been going through is there's such a natural instinct as a reporter when you hear one of these big stories breaking. I had this yesterday when the McGwire story broke. You want to immediately get on the phone and start working on something, or call your editor and say, okay, what do you need me to do? And then you have that split second, and then you realize, oh, wait a minute, there's nothing for me to do. I don't have a paper to work for. So I think that's the hardest part. It's kind of just been ingrained in your mind all these years that you react to all the news that happens, and you want to be a part of it and write about it, and you just kind of have to watch from the sidelines.
No doubt that's going to happen again very soon for you and from a lot of your guys from the Times, because you guys did an excellent job. When you first heard about the Mark McGwire admission and then saw how it was handled and saw how tersely it was handled, and the fact that in 24 hours he had his statement released, he goes on TV, clearly it was orchestrated. A lot of people have said this is the by-the-book way to admit to using steroids. This is the best way. What did you think about the way he conducted his business?
Well, I guess it's probably the best out of anybody who's done it so far who has come out. Oh, I thought Andy Pettit also did it well when he admitted it. You know, I don't know if there's ever a best way to do it, but certainly if you look at some of the other examples of the guys who were really evasive about it. I remember Jason Giambi came out and he apologized but wouldn't say for what. He wouldn't really come out and say it. I remember Paul Wadukka, who was named in the Mitchell Report right after he signed with the Nationals, when he met with all of us the first day he showed up to spring training, he came out and said, I want to apologize for what I did. And somebody said to him, well, what exactly is it you're apologizing for? And he said, you know, come on, bro, next question. I don't need to answer that. So, you know, that kind of defiance doesn't really work. I think what fans and sports writers need to hear from these people is a full admission. Here's what I did, and I'm genuinely sorry for it. And I think McGwire probably came as close as anyone has to it. I think I and a lot of other people would have liked to hear a little more detail, what exactly he took, where he got it from, and an acknowledgement that yes, this did affect the way he played. It wasn't just about keeping his body healthy. This did allow him to hit more home runs than he would have if he hadn't.
That seems to be the move, is to when you come out and admit to using steroids, you say it's, I was coming back from injury, I was dinged up, I wanted to be able to keep playing, rather than say, look, I wanted to hit more home runs so I could break records and make more money. It seems to me that that's the sympathetic way to go when you admit to your performance-enhancing drug use.
It is, but, you know, I think there is some sincerity to that. And I think as much attention as steroids and HGH and performance-enhancing drugs have gotten, as much as we want to think that it's always the sinister reason behind it, I really do believe that for a lot of these guys, it began with, at least in the first case, of they were injured and they needed something to try to help them get back on the field, especially guys whose maybe their career was in jeopardy. And there was a point, people forget, that McGwire, after a great couple seasons when he debuted with the A's, he had a lot of injuries. He was hitting about 200, wasn't a productive player for about a 5 or 6 year period before he then picked it up again with later on with the A's and then with the Cardinals. So for a lot of these guys, there is that fear of, this is my livelihood, I may lose it. And so I can see how that would be an entry point into taking these things. But to continue using it for the next 10 years on and off, as he admitted that he did, I find it hard to believe that it was only trying to keep himself healthy, the reason that he was doing it at that point.
What I seem to think that somebody is holding something over his head, and it's just a matter of, this is too much pressure at this point. It's affecting my home life. It's affecting my personal life. I'm just going to get it out here. I want to move on with my life. I want to coach as a batting coach, maybe possibly something else. Do you believe that there could be any validity to that, that somebody's basically kind of, you don't want to say blackmail because that's kind of strong, but the fact that he knows the people who know what he was doing and the possibilities of those things coming out at any given moment and any given time could actually derail whatever it is that he's doing. Do you think that that would be the motivation? And if not, what is the motivation for him coming out and saying that he did this?
I don't think that's necessarily the motivation. I don't think that there's someone out there who secretly, you know, had all the dirt on him. Because basically Ken Seiko, in his book, wrote this all years ago, and everyone just kind of brushed it off as, well, that's just Jose Canseco.
Right, that's a player. Somebody else may have, you know, evidence, non-deniable evidence. You know, I'm just thinking in my mind, yeah, you can beat a case. You can beat the whole public image thing when another player comes out and speaks against you. But,
sure.
But when a doctor comes out or somebody who is administering, a trainer, whatever it may, who it may have been, comes out and says, it could have been a massage therapist. You don't know who it was, but they could come out at any point in time and say, look, I'm writing a book. Here's the evidence. You know, whatever it may be. I mean, this is Mark McGwire, you know, the guy who was chasing history with Sammy Sosa. They may have kept the syringes. You know, you never know. People have very interesting, what we'll say, motivations or whatever it may be. But they may have kept all kinds of different evidence that would show what Mark McGwire was doing. I seem to think that for him, because I don't think that him coming out saying this would have had any bearing on him getting a batting coach job or not. Well, I don't see the significant value in coming out and saying this to get a job.
Here's why it would. No, it would not have had an impact on him getting the job, because Tony La Russa has been a friend of his for years and has been trying to get him to take this hitting coach job for several years before he finally agreed to it now. But here's the thing. McGwire has been in exile for the last 5 years since he appeared in Congress. There's been maybe one or two public appearances, but hardly anything, and he has not faced the media or the public really in any capacity. Once you've signed on to be a major league hitting coach, you're going to be in that clubhouse, in the dugout every day with reporters there every single day. And I can guarantee you that if he didn't come out and say this thing yesterday, and in fact, because I've been thinking about this and other writers have all winter since we found out he was going to be their hitting coach, the first day of spring training, there is going to be a media horde there in Jupiter, Florida at the Cardinals camp, and they're going to want to talk to him because this is the first time he's been in uniform and back in baseball in 5 years. So I think this was a preemptive move, sensing that that was going to happen, and unless he wanted to just forever say, I'm not going to talk about the past, I think this is the only way for him to go about doing this if he wanted to get back into baseball.
Mark Zuckerman joins us on the LeVar Arrington Show with Chad Dukes here. Mark, before we let you go, talk with me about this kid, left-hander, Aroldis Chapman, who just signed a $30 million deal with the Cincinnati Reds. The quote that I read in SI is, he's a left-handed pitcher that throws 100 miles an hour. You can travel the world and not find that. I read that the Red Sox were interested. I read the Nationals were actually very interested. That Federal Baseball blog has been talking about this kid for months. He ends up in Cincinnati. It seems like a tremendous gamble to throw this much money at a pitcher that had a 3.72 ERA in Cuba. Clearly the sky's the limit if you can throw 100 miles an hour and you're a lefty. Do you think this was the right move, and were you surprised that he ended up in Cincinnati?
I was surprised he ended up in Cincinnati because I figured you're probably looking at one of the bigger name, bigger market clubs that we always hear about spending all this kind of money. The Nationals were interested in him, and they made a real serious offer, maybe as much as $20 million. Mike Rizzo, the GM, went and saw him work out, I think, a month ago in Houston, and came away impressed, and a lot of the Nationals people were really impressed with him and basically equated him to a left-handed version of Steven Strasburg. So that said, how much money are you willing to commit to a guy with no real track record? They had to make that decision with Strasburg and felt like $15 million was as high as they could go, and they were in a little different position because it's the draft and they had exclusive rights to him. It is a gamble, but maybe a team like the Cincinnati Reds that can't compete with the Yankees and the Red Sox for the big-name free agent, maybe they figured this is their best path to try to land a big-name player that can help them get back to a position where they're up on, you know, on top of their division. It's a gamble. It's $30 million for a guy you don't really know for sure, But if he is what everyone says he could be, it could turn out to be a steal for them.
Are you sure he's 22? I've heard his age vacillate everywhere from 22 to 24 years old in these reports. And that's not like this problem hasn't happened before with Latin American baseball players.
No, and that's the problem with all of these guys. And I, you know what the Nationals' history with that is with Smiley Gonzalez that took down Jim Bowden. So maybe that, you know, deep down was part of their thinking here is not wanting to get caught in another case like that. There's no way to know for sure. But if he, even if he's 3-4 years older than that, still a 25, 26-year-old left-hander throws 100 miles an hour, you know, you take your chance. It'll be interesting to see if he lives up to it because there's going to be a lot of pressure on this guy the moment he steps on a mound for the first time.
Mark, clearly you do a tremendous job. If people want to get in contact with you, we have lots of different media outlets that listen to this show. Are you on Twitter? Do you have an email address? What's the best way?
Let me give you my email address. I'm still looking at some other jobs, so I haven't created my own blog or anything yet, but you can get me at Zuckerman12.
Zuckerman.
Zuckerman, number 12 at AOL.
Zuckerman12 at AOL.com.
That is one cool last name, bro.
Excellent. Mark, we appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, buddy.
There he goes. And again, all these guys are going to get snapped up real quick. So if you're a media outlet looking for somebody that knows what they're doing for media jobs as far as covering local sports teams, these Times guys are going to be the best in the business. Let's take a quick break. There's a lot of phone calls on the line. 800-636-1067. We'll get some more listener reactions next.